Bogaerts may be struggling to start this season. No, he is struggling to start this season. May have had my favorite at-bat of the year, though. Last night in the Padres' six-run sixth inning. Welcome back. It's hour number two of Ben and Woods. Tuesday morning here on 97.3 The Fan. A hit and run executed to perfection. Yeah, isn't that a thing of beauty? You don't see them very often nowadays. And maybe, I don't know if Paul feels this way just because we're a little bit older and remember it from our youth. But to see the vacated right side when a guy takes off from first or second,
and then
see a batter just crack, just poke a ball, a five hopper through the vacated hole in the right side to put runners at first and third with nobody out. Oh, there's a lot of satisfaction there.
It makes me sweat.
Why are your pants off?
I know, yeah. That's how much I love a good hit and run. I really do. It's such a ballsy call. It's just like, all right, you're gonna go, and he's gonna need to slap one through that. So, I mean, it takes the right combo.
Take a guy who's struggling and go, now you've got to do something specifically difficult.
100%.
When we ask you to do this, and he came through.
When I played and would get a hit and run sign, I'm like, are you out of your mind? I'm the wrong guy to do this to. And of course, you get that. Pitch on the inner third, and you're like, hey, I gotta fist this one over. It's just the worst. But Xander's hit in now, I think, seven straight games.
Absolutely.
Yeah, made some good contact last night.
Two more hits
last night, which is great, man. You get him going, and, you know, the sky's the limit for this team if you get him going.
So even though the Padres were held scoreless in eight of the nine innings, it still ended up, if you look at the box score, they had two straight games on Saturday and Sunday in which every single player in the lineup got a hit. That did not happen yesterday, but everybody did get on base. Seven of their nine starters got at least one hit. And the two who didn't, Luis Arraez and Ha-Seong Kim, both reached via a walk. So you're getting contributions 1 through 9 consistently. And it makes a difference when you're putting pressure on the other team all the way through the order, putting pressure on the opposing pitching staff, you know, all the way. They can't just look, okay, well, as long as I get through the 5-hitter, 6 through 9, I know I can get those guys out. I'm good. And the Padres now have a lineup that is more difficult to handle for opposing teams.
Donovan Solano's at-bats were magnificent, too. First game up with the new squad, works a really patient walk his first AB, and then Ben catches two nasty barrels after that. That shot up the middle to drive in a run was fantastic. So, really nice addition, lengthens this team. And, you know, it's funny because it's going to cost Tyler Wade some playing time. And Tyler's been in the middle of a lot of things this year. He's had some goofy plays. He's not incredibly good on defense. Well, they put him in last night to pinch run. And I don't know if someone missed a sign. I did see the jump that he got. Potentially the worst jump I've ever seen in big league history. I mean, the dude's foot was on the ground when he took off. You ever seen a guy thrown out by that much?
Not someone with the speed of Tyler Wade.
Not someone with the speed he has.
When he took off, I go, oh, this is going to be a close play. And I go, what is he doing halfway between first and second? The ball's already there.
That's called committing. He just committed and said, I'm going to go. He was dead by 15 feet. They got that kid.
Yeah,
so,
Jackson Merrill got picked off as well.
You got to clean
up the base paths a little bit. There were some mistakes in the game yesterday, but I've enjoyed seeing the top to bottom offense in the lineup. And that's not to say the Padres aren't going to need some home runs as well. You're not going to win every game by putting 6-run rallies together on, you know, BABIP, a couple of bloop hits
and
that set the table.
Barrels,
then you got some line drives. It was good timing. It was the timing that was missing all of last season. But you know how the Dodgers got their 6-3 wins, fine too. You know,
four home
belt out four home runs and just club a team early and hold on for the win. There's no wrong way to necessarily win a game.
No.
Power is great when you get it. It's nice though when you don't get a home run to beat a team that hit two home runs. How many times last year did the Padres hit two home runs and lose a game like this to a team that didn't hit any?
Because they couldn't string a thing together.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, a couple
and,
solo shots.
And the other
shots
team had one big inning where they just kept stringing things together.
Yep.
This feels like the opposite of last year's team.
No, it was an enjoyable. It was that. Obviously, that inning was fantastic. It was one of the best innings you've seen. Anytime you can hang a six spot and it's enough to win a game. Beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And you could see, and I, you know, Early in the game, Toddy hit a ball pretty hard that's probably out in the sixth inning and not going to be out in the first or second.
Yeah, the wind was blowing in early, but
just
then not late when the Cubs hit their two home runs.
Yeah, so you see guys go up. They use the whole field. You get a little lucky on a couple of those, but then you take advantage. Profar has been unbelievable. Again, the at-bat from Solano there was great. The at-bat from Xander was phenomenal there. I like Mike Schilt being aggressive and doing the double steal, and let's go, man. Let's push the issue. You got 65-year-old Yan Gomes behind the plate, who, again, catches another home run against the San Diego Padres. It is maybe the easiest prop bet in history. And again, I say this, and I'm not joking. If I'm in the Chicago media today, and I don't care that Yan Gomes is 65 years old, he's catching or DHing. Like, if he's,
it makes no sense.
If he's not in the lineup, Craig Counsell should lose his job. Really?
It makes no sense. He homered off Eniel De Los Santos.
Yes.
It's not like he just owns Eniel De Los Santos.
No.
He owns people wearing Padres uniforms. Really, the Padres, when Yan Gomes comes to the plate, they should put on like different hats and shirts.
Yes, seriously.
Just to fool him into thinking he's facing another team.
It's staggering.
It makes no sense.
He has two home runs this season. They're both against the San Diego Padres. And again, if I'm in Chicago this morning and I'm looking at the lineup and he's not in it, I have to call for Craig Counsell's head. That is your classic overmanaging, overthinking.
Put him in the lineup, then he's the DH.
100%. Put him in the lineup. He owns this team. I mean, he owns this team. So
why is he batting ninth? That was probably a mistake as well.
Three hole.
Could have,
I mean,
get him up more times. Lead him off. Get him up as many times as possible against the Padres.
Ian Happ in the three hole went 0-for-4 with 3 Ks. Yan Gomes is hitting third for me today off Randy Vasquez. Period. Period. The end. You can call me crazy, and all I'll do is point to the board with his numbers against the San Diego Padres on it.
We need a contestant for Take on Woods. Going to play here in about 3 minutes. Call now. 833-288-0973 if you heard yesterday. We are playing this week only for $25 Carl's Jr. gift cards. Why not? 833-288-0973. Take on Woods in just a couple of minutes. I want to just quickly address, Joey in the chat says, can we talk about how garbage Tatis looks? And he said, outside of that swing that he almost homered in the first inning, he also had
Joey,
a hit.
Settle down.
That's Joey. He's on my baseball team. He needs to relax.
But can we also, I think it's important to note, Tatis is swinging through some pitches. He's not locked in, to be sure. But that six-run rally does not necessarily happen without him leading a double steal to start that, you know, inning, move the runners over, setting up what ended up being the biggest inning of the game. It's one thing to be struggling at the plate. A lot of guys do that. Tatis still can contribute in other ways. Defensively, base running, you know, puts pressure. Anytime he hits a ground ball, you can see the fielders out there know who's running and how they've got to, you know, they got to work fast, you know, force some errors out there. It's good to know that Tatis can still have an impact even when he is not completely locked into the plate. And he had an impact on that game yesterday without being, you know, full Tatis.
Yeah, I'm looking at his sliders and stuff right now. It's good. I mean, look, the barrel rate's up, the hard hit ball's up, average exit velo is up, expected slug is way up, expected batting average is .299. You know, listen, the chase, he's chasing pitches. Like you said, he's not really locked in. His whiff is not great. And he's K-ing a little bit too much, you know, for a two-hole hitter, the guy that you need to try to barrel a ball and get.
I'm sure it's frustrating because his teammates, a lot of them are, you know, they're finding the success that they didn't have last year. And he's actually kind of still in that, why can't I get the ones to fall
well,
in?
Well, and he has gotten a little bit unlucky. But yeah, I wouldn't say he's garbage by any stretch, but he needs to get it going.
Yeah, once he does, and, you know, if Xander Bogaerts ever does, with the length of the Padres lineup, you know, they'll be a real force and a real threat.
No doubt.
You know, at some point offensively. Now, is there going to be enough pitching to back it up? That also remains a question, and we'll address that. AJ Preller is going to join us at 9:30 this morning. The Padres president of baseball operations and general manager will be with us later in the show today, so we're looking forward to that. Do we have a contestant, Paulie, for Take on Woods yet? No. All right, 833-288-0973. I had someone in the chat yesterday, I think it was on Twitter, say, I guarantee Ben has never... Junior. False. False. I have had many double Western bacon cheeseburgers.
Delicious.
In my day. It's been a while, I will admit. It's been a while. But that was one of my go-tos when I was a teenager, was the double Western bacon cheeseburger.
Yeah, I've had breakfast there a few times.
I don't think I've ever had Carl's Jr.
Never once?
Really?
That's pretty good.
They didn't have it in Seattle where I grew up, and then came down to California.
Well, in other parts of the country, and I never understood
Hardee's.
This, Carl's Jr. is called Hardee's.
Yeah.
But the menu is the same. The logo is
different.
But it's the same.
There might even be a third branch.
Is there another?
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Maybe.
And then Jack in the Box isn't a thing anywhere else either. It's Southwest?
Yeah, it is. No, it's...
Is it across the country?
They have them in Texas.
They do?
Yeah, well, that's south.
And we don't have Whataburger here.
Oh, we have them in Arizona.
They've expanded. Everything's expanded to Arizona.
Everything's in Arizona.
Somehow Arizona gets everything.
There's nothing you can't find in Arizona. Nothing. And I do mean nothing.
All right, I see some people calling in. Let's get to our Carl's Jr. Take on Woods game.
It's time for Take on Woods.
Woods. Woods.
Take on Woods, brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Only takes 15 minutes. You don't have to get out of your car. For directions and discounts, go to SoCalOilChange.com. That's SoCalOilChange.com. Get that car tuned up for the drive to Arizona for all your fast food needs. Let's try Jamie. Are you calling for Take on Woods today?
Yes, sir. You guys were mad umpires today, so I thought I'd take a chance.
Oh, Jamie the ump is in. Okay, Jamie. You are playing, as I said, for the $25 gift card to Carl's Jr. The El Diablo burger is back at Carl's Jr. for eternity with a potato bun, charbroiled beef, a spicy habanero sauce, bacon, jalapeno popper bites, pepper jack cheese, and jalapenos. Try it now. I may actually try that one. That sounds really good. All right, here are your categories. We've got two all-two-second song categories called Song and Dance. One is from the 80s. One is from the year 2000 and beyond. All titles include the word dance in them. The other category is called Double Trouble. Those are five bands with double words in their name. So, Song and Dance from the 80s, Song and Dance since 2000, or Double Trouble, Jamie, what would you like to play?
Song and Dance from the 80s.
Song and Dance from the 80s. All right, Paulie's got this one set up. It's an all-two-second song category featuring songs from the 1980s, including the word dance in the title. You're going to have to give me the title of the song and the artist to score each of those points. Get as many as the five as you can. If you don't know an answer, say pass. We can come back to it if there's time left at the end of the 60 seconds. Jamie, are you ready to play? All right, Paulie, you've got all of our songs queued up?
I'm ready.
All right, Paulie is ready. All right, 60 seconds on the clock. The category is Song and Dance of the 80s. Jamie, your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck. Let's take on Woods.
Safety dance, remember that happened?
Incorrect. Let's go to song number two.
Oh.
All right, go to number three.
Safety dance, remember that happened?
That is correct. Song number four.
Let's Dance, David Bowie.
Correct. Song number five.
Pass.
Now go back to song number two, Paul.
Pass.
All right. Song number five against Last Chance.
All I want to do is dance. Can't remember the artist.
Oh, I think we're almost out of time. Yeah, it's All She Wants to Do Is Dance by Don Henley. But you did get two. You got the Safety Dance, Men Without Hats, and Let's Dance by David Bowie. The first two were Dance Hall Days by Wang Chung, and I Want to Dance with Somebody by Whitney Houston. So, I don't know. We'll see how Woodsy does. 80s is his wheelhouse for sure, no doubt about that. All right, Jamie's score is locked in. Won't give you the category. We'll let you know it's an all 2 second song.
Okay.
Category, though. So, titles and artists, please. 60 seconds back on the clock. Woods, your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck. Let's take on Jamie. Song number two.
killing me, Pat.
Song number three.
The Safety Dance by Men Without Hats.
Correct. Song number four.
Oh, that's Let's Dance, David Bowie.
Correct. Song number five.
All She Wants to Do Is Dance by Don Henley.
Correct. Song number one.
Dance All Day by some turd. Pass.
Go song number two.
I Want to Dance with Someone, Whitney Houston.
Correct. Song number one. Can you give me the artist?
Oh, stupid.
Time's up. You did win it, though, 4-2.
Who was that?
Their other famous song is Wang Chung.
Oh, Wang Chung.
Wang Chung, Dance Hall Days.
We were cool.
Oh. Umpire Jamie comes up a little bit close in a song and dance from the 1980s.
Once I got dance, it was easier.
Yeah, all dance songs from the 1980s.
That song sucks.
Not a fan.
Sucks.
Wang Chung. Everybody sucks. Wang Chung tonight.
That song sucks too, but that one really sucks. Really sucks. We were cool. Oh, nice. Some of those songs in the 80s were just horrific. Horrifically bad.
Woods always has strong opinions when it comes to music in the 1980s. Really, any decade.
Did you like Wang Chung?
I don't like Dance Hall Days either. I can listen to Everybody Wang Chung tonight.
Of course you could. Of course. It's the least surprising thing I've ever heard.
I understand. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with Don't Do This is next up. And I have a doo-doo this story involving a changeover in bowl game sponsorship that I think is somewhat intriguing. Did you see this one?
I did not.
All right, that'll be my doo-doo story for today. Get to that coming up. Next, with Ben and Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Kelly's traffic first.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
Ugh, I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
What's baseball really like? Join former Padre MLB All-Star Brett Boone and his big league friends on his podcast, The Boone Podcast. Did you see who he had on this week?
Pete Rose.
Pete Rose.
Peter
That's
Rose.
A choice. Booney. Yeah. I'll have to ask him about that when we talk to him again. You can follow the Boone Podcast in the free Odyssey app wherever you get your podcasts. I know Woods loves a good cheating scandal, so I'll start Don't Do This, which is brought to you by the Kraft Taco in Sorrento Valley. Kraft Taco has some of the best quality tacos in all of San Diego. Go to thekrafttaco.com. Take a look at their happy hour specials today, thekrafttaco.com. I'll start IndyCar ahead of the Indianapolis 500. Big cheating scandal rocking the Penske team. Team Penske.
Are they putting weights in their fish? No?
No.
That's my favorite one of all time.
This one's pretty straightforward. So, and this is a little complex. So IndyCar has what's called their push-to-pass system. And it is basically software that's installed into the cars that allows cars to gain some extra horsepower that's controlled by the race officials in order to let them pass like easily during like safety laps,
right,
and to make sure all the cars in the right place. And like, how do I get this car past the other one? Well, they actually can just by computer now give the cars extra horsepower.
A little
juice,
yeah.
It's like, you know, the nitrous oxide in the tank.
Turbo
boost. This is electronically. Well, they found that somehow some of the Team Penske members had overridden the software, like hacked into it, and they had been able to use it during the race to start giving them the extra horsepower when they weren't supposed to have it. Now, Roger Penske says they investigated. There was no malicious intent. It was apparently,
accidental hacking
into the system, was installed incorrectly or something. I don't know, but they ended up suspending the president of Team Penske, along with three others, for two races for their roles in that cheating scandal. I'm still highly suspicious of how you can just have a button that just makes your car go faster in a car race that's determining which cars are the fastest.
Yeah, but is that what the gas pedal's
that's
for?
That's what I thought so, too.
It's such a complex
so hard
sport
to understand now.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Are you guys big Are you guys big throwers of things in anger?
No.
No. Never?
I mean, have I tossed a golf club after a bad shot once or twice?
You have?
I do feel like you're probably just going to damage your golf club. And then
or
you have
the
to go,
course.
Or you have to go get it once you throw it. It's not like you're just going to leave it there. So
I've seen Paulie slam his helmet before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've slammed a helmet or two in my
day. I don't like chuck it throughout the dugout.
No,
I'll toss it into my bag or hit the bench or something.
Yeah, for just emphasis.
I'm just mad at myself.
Well, last night, Nuggets guard Jamal Murray. He should have been called for a technical on this one, but he threw a... threw a heating pad onto the floor in the middle of Denver's 106-80 game two against the Minnesota Timberwolves. And, he was frustrated, tossed it onto the court in anger. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope picked it up, threw it to the sideline. No referee caught it, though. They didn't catch him doing it. If they had... He would have been teed up.
Was it one of those chemical ones where you break it and it gets all hot? Those kind of creep me out, actually.
But it's probably, my guess is probably one of
those.
Well,
it's either that or it's the plug-in one that grandma uses to keep warm. I can't imagine they have that on the bench.
By grandma, do you mean my 34-year-old wife that sleeps on one every night? Is that what you mean when you say grandma?
Sorry, Hannah.
Because there's one literally in our bed as we speak right now. And sometimes there are fights over who gets the heating pad in my home.
I'll lay it down on the bed, like after a basketball game, the lower back, heat it up. Oh, yeah.
I'm a fan of the heating pad.
I want to be cool in bed, not hot in bed.
I do too, but I don't sleep with it on.
Okay.
But like the knees, sometimes the lower back, Paulie, you're right. Laying on that bad boy for a while.
Good.
But then it starts to, if you go shirtless, you're like, all right, I'm searing the skin.
Melting.
I'm searing the skin off my back. They didn't see it, so I guess nothing really happened if they didn't see it. He should have gotten a technical for it. But you can't do that. Somebody slips on that thing, man, you can't throw stuff onto the court.
I can see why they're frustrated, though. The Nuggets looked horrible last night. It wasn't even watchable. They're down 0-2 at home.
0-2 at home, yeah.
There's got to be some money lost
in
on
hindsight,
that.
The fact that the Lakers actually led like 100 more minutes than the Nuggets in that first round series may have been a red flag that the Nuggets aren't as good as they were last year.
Yeah.
And then a good win for the Knicks last night in game one. Good. That was the good game against the Pacers. All right, finally, do this.
D.D. Mega doo-doo.
Woods, you'll be happy to know. The Barstool Arizona Bowl is no more.
Okay.
They have dropped their sponsorship and has been picked up.
This is 1 year, right?
Two years, I think. But it's been picked up by a new entity. On December 28th in Tucson, they will now have the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl presented by Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop.
Sorry about that, Ben.
Fantastic.
Dog says his intent is to bring the juice back to college football and also, of course, to promote their new line of gin and alcoholic pre-canned beverages
that
he and Dre are making. I guess you can.
I guess you can.
Yeah. So it is now the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl presented by Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop, which makes that game eminently more watchable for me.
I think probably, yeah. It's more like morbid curiosity to see how it's going to go.
And if you want to really get excited, it pits a Mountain West team against a Mid-American team. Oof. So there is the chance San Diego State could play
in the Gin and
in the
Juice
Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl presented by Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop on December 28th in Tucson.
The people that run that bowl will just take, and they're like, we don't care. We just got to get somebody in here. We do not care.
Yeah, bowl sponsorships used to be kind of classy things. Now it's whatever you can grab
you
at
can
this
get.
Point.
Yeah. Jim's doo-doo fertilizer bowl.
We will take it.
They just don't care.
Strengthening the argument that bowl games mean nothing.
I mean, there's a Jimmy Kimmel bowl. They'll take anything they can get at this point.
Yep, no
doubt. We were on the brink of the Ben and Woods bowl.
We were very close. We were in negotiations. Yeah.
Mark Neville, if you're listening, we will still accept that offer.
Anytime.
You need someone.
The Ben and Woods bowl would be sick.
We're willing to lend our
to
names.
Go to the actual game,
yes,
though, because that
probably.
Would be a problem.
You do.
Yeah,
if it's the Ben.
I don't want to do it.
Just watched on TV at home.
The Pound Town Bowl. Now that, Pound Town Pound Cakes would be fantastic.
They're
a little mom and pop shop. I don't know that they could afford to sponsor an entire bowl game, but you never know. Thank you, Benny.
That's don't and do this for a Tuesday.
that was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Dylan Cease spoke with the media yesterday in Chicago. It made you nervous for a couple of minutes.
I didn't really get it because I saw the announcement come out that Dylan Cease will address the media. And then I saw after AJ Preller will address the media. I'm like, what in the world is happening? Now, I tweeted it and forgot about it. And then somebody said, yeah, he's... They said, well, he's back in Chicago. I'm like, yeah, but he didn't pitch for the Cubs. He pitched for the White Sox. But, yeah, I guess he hadn't had a chance
to
talk
but there were actually Potters some... Potters won't be in the play the White Sox, I don't think, this year.
Yeah, well, they come to San Diego very late. So this was a chance for you know, Southside media to jump in and see what Dylan had to say. And he had some spicy things to say about his old team and some good things to say about his new team.
We can get into that. Good.
Yeah, we can get into that coming up next with Ben and Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Dylan Cease will get the series finale tomorrow. You know, cross your fingers. Hopefully the Padres going for a sweep.
Yep.
Today will be the challenge with Randy Vasquez getting the spot start against Shota Imanaga. But Cease was the center of attention yesterday in the dugout there at Wrigley Field when he met with the Chicago media for the first time since leaving the White Sox in the trade right before the start of the season. We'll hear a little bit of what Dylan Cease had to say coming up after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. Now, so this is a bit of a courtesy for the Chicago media, just a convenience of making Dylan Cease available. It's like if you know, the Royals come to town, they make Seth Lugo available to San Diego media to chat with him, just to catch up
do that?
At once. They sometimes do. Other teams will do that when they visit San Diego if you've got a former player that's going to be of some interest. And it honestly, it saves Dylan Cease some effort as well. Instead of having like six different reporters, and they've got a bunch of, obviously Chicago's a big city, so there's a bunch of different outlets. And instead of having them all come by like six different times during the road trip to say, hey, Dylan, can I get a few minutes? Just want to talk to you about leaving, you know, the White Sox and the end of your tenure there. They do it in press conference format where they all just get around and ask questions at once. And Dylan Cease can just get it over with. So he met with the Chicago media yesterday, had some interesting comments about his departure from the White Sox. We got that audio, Paulie. Here's Dylan Cease yesterday before the game at Wrigley Field.
What's it mean to come back to Chicago? You're at Wrigley Field, your first team.
Yeah, it's always good to come back. You know, obviously I don't have quite as much history with the Cubs, but I enjoy Wrigley, I enjoy Chicago. It's good to be back.
What went through your mind when you were traded? Everyone knew it was going to happen, but how it happened and when it happened?
Honestly, mostly initially it was just figuring out the logistics of everything. I find myself sometimes when I'm falling asleep or whatever, kind of just thinking of some memories I had here. But for the most part, it's just been just logistics and, you know, figuring things out and getting things done.
What you're doing right now, after what happened last year, feel like it's, you're in a good spot?
Yeah, like, you know, we're a very competitive team right now. I'm happy with how I've been throwing it. And it's great to be here.
What's been the biggest key to the start you're on with your new team so far?
I think it's just a continuation of really a process. I started last year. It just took me a full year to kind of figure out what works for me. I think that's just baseball sometimes. It's we're not robots out there, so sometimes mechanical cues and feels and different things can take some time. But, it's, you know, last year wasn't enjoyable in really any way, but I can sit here now and say I got a lot out of it. I learned kind of what doesn't work, and I got back to, you know, hopefully now what is working.
What's your mentality in the rest of the rotation when someone like Musgrove goes out, even if it's hopefully just a kind of minimal stint?
I think it's, I mean, I always kind of just bring the same focus to the field every day. I think we're all just focusing on what we need to work on and what we need to practice to prepare to compete. And throughout the course of any season, usually teams' depths are going to be tested, especially in the pitching. You know, in pitching, it's obviously a fairly injury-prone position. So I don't think Joe has anything major. I don't think he does either. So now it's time for someone else to step up, and they get a great opportunity to get experience and prove that they can compete at the level, and hopefully whoever steps up does, and then you know, they're that much more prepared and that much better. Then Joe comes back and he's feeling good, and then now it's two pluses, you know.
You guys wake me up when it's over, for the love of God.
It's over.
You did notice the headline devastating comment when he said, last year wasn't enjoyable in really any way.
Any way, shape,
for Dylan Cease with the Chicago White Sox.
Didn't have a good year personally. Team didn't.
Yeah, and the reason he said it, he said, it's definitely, again, with the Sox, though, I mean, I felt like we really had the talent. We just didn't put it together. It's interesting because there are a lot of parallels between the White Sox and certainly last year's San Diego Padres. Expectations high, you know, seemingly a great, you know, nucleus of talent put together that simply couldn't put it together and get it done. And obviously they've gone even worse. They've gone the wrong direction. They're now one of the worst teams in baseball. And I don't blame Dylan Cease for being extremely happy that he got out of there when he did. Because that is a bad situation. And when you're in the middle of a bad situation, as much as you want to say, hey, they're a professional, they're getting paid for their job, how can you possibly be at your best when you're surrounded by so much, you know, so much misery, so much that is going wrong? Of course he had a not great season last year. And of course he's pitching better this year for a team that has got some at least life to it and some hope that, you know, there could be a postseason run at some point. There's no hope in Chicago right now on the South Side. And he's very glad to be out of there.
I'm just thinking about that female reporter and how she sounds like every woman I ever dated in the city of Chicago.
All I could think of was Spot. The movie The Fugitive.
Yeah.
You have a one-armed man in custody. I can't do a Chicago. But.
Spot. Hey, are you in a good spot right now? Excuse me? Yeah, I got to go to class. All right. See you later. It's... Excuse me, the Willie.
Sears Tower?
Yeah, the Sears Tower. Oh, hey, how are you?
But, you know, Dylan Cease was probably the most important acquisition. Much more important than Luis Arraez for the San Diego Padres.
I shudder to think.
Where would
I
they say. Be right now?
Where would they be? Honestly, who is stepping up and filling that role?
I mean, Waldron's your number four without Cease. And then Brito or Vasquez. As your number five, with even less depth than you already have. I don't think we realized it necessarily at the time, how desperate the Padres were for pitching, and probably still are to some extent. But without Dylan Cease, this season, the start of this season, could look quite different than it does.
Well, and factor in, too, you have two of your top starters. One has already been on the IL, and one just went on the IL as well. So, yeah, man, Dylan Cease is a really, really important part of this team. And, you know, tomorrow's going to be a big start for him. Need him to come through. And he was talking about that, too. And guys got to step up right now. I'd love to see Randy Vasquez step up today and just get some outs. You know, get some outs, do your job. And see what you can put together offensively against Shoto Imanaga, which so far this season hasn't been very much. And he looked filthy in spring training. He looks filthy now. What a story he has been. And is your kind of clear rookie of the year right now in the NL.
I'm looking at Cease's numbers. And obviously the loss to the Phillies when he gave up the five runs and the six hits is still kind of fresh in our minds. He had a good start his last time out against the Diamondbacks. But in six of his seven starts, other than that one, you know, kind of bad outing against the Phillies, every single time he's given up, here's the hits. 4-2-2-1-3. The runs, 2-2-0-1-1-1.
It's fantastic. I
mean, that's six out of seven starts doing pretty much everything you can. With a little offensive support, he could easily be 6-1 right now. Now, he's only 4-2 because he hasn't gotten the support in all of those games, but he could be sitting at 6-1 and being discussed among the Cy Young candidates in the National League right now, with a 2.55 ERA, very solid acquisition at a timely moment for AJ Preller.
Yeah. And again, using some of those pieces that you got back for Juan Soto to flip for Dylan Cease was really, really a brilliant move by AJ Preller. And he's been, you know, so far this year, and we'll talk to him again at 9:30 this morning. AJ Preller will join us. Those have been some really, really important moves.
You know, speaking of the moves, and we'll have AJ on at 9:30, a lot of analysis still going on about the Luis Arraez trade.
We'll ask AJ about it when he joins the show at 9:30.
Yeah. What time is AJ joining us?
9:30.
In case you missed it.
I, for the most part, I was reading Ken Rosenthal's piece yesterday about the trade, and he makes the point that Luis Arraez is viewed very differently by many people around.
Absolutely.
Some people don't think he's valuable at all.
Right.
Which is strange, but they look at him and go, guy doesn't hit for power, doesn't walk that much.
He's not fast.
He's not a good defensive player. Yeah. They consider him kind of a net negative. And then there's other people who think He has a tremendous amount of value. One of the very few guys who doesn't strike out, has great bat control, puts the ball in play, hits line drives, and, you know, hits for a high batting average. And there is a very, very diverse set of opinions about Luis Arraez in Major League Baseball.
It is interesting to me, and I was thinking about it yesterday. I saw a couple people tweeting about it, and the lineup construction for me sometimes falls in the category of bullpen management, you know, where it's like, all right, this is kind of a necessary evil of the job of sports talk radio. Do you wonder if he would be better served hitting lower in the order than you know, you want a leadoff hitter that is on base, has a high on base percentage. But when in Luis's case, he doesn't walk a ton. His batting average is His batting average is usually around his OBP.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't get a hit, he's not getting on. But he gets a lot of hits, right? And he puts the ball in play. Why wouldn't you hit him second or third? You know what I'm saying? Like in certain instances, and I haven't gone back and looked to see where he's hit traditionally in his career.
Mostly leadoff.
It does feel like that's going to be the spot for him here, even against last night, a really tough lefty. And hey, you saw what he's capable of doing. I mean, the ball he hit in the first inning, he pounded that ball down third baseline, made a nice play on it. And, you know, listen, you take the good with the bad. You keep hitting barrels, good things are going to happen. But I was wondering, like, would he be better served? Would he like the ability to drive in more runs? That expands his game a little bit. You can't, harder to drive in runs from the leadoff spot, obviously. But if you move him down to two or three, is that something you would consider if you were the skipper?
Yeah, you know, I worry about the amount that he puts the ball into play. If he's batting two and you get the leadoff hitter on, he doesn't have a ton of speed. So he does ground out a bunch.
Yeah.
You know, when his hard hit balls go right at someone and he's always going to make contact, you may have a number of double plays and you'll stay out of at least one of those by putting him in the leadoff spot.
Yeah,
because
for sure.
you can't hand into a double play when you lead off in the first inning. I think you make a good point, though. He's still just 27 years old.
Yeah, man.
Not super young, but still on the level where his game isn't necessarily everything it's going to be. And the comp that you hear a ton is Tony Gwynn. And Tony Gwynn wasn't exactly who he finished when he was 27 either. He developed more offensive skill, more defensive skill as he went on. And I wonder what kind of player Luis Arraez is going to be in 4 or 5 years. Can he keep it up the way Tony Gwynn did, deep into his 30s, and remain the hitter that he is today? Because the longevity is such an important part of it as well. But Tony added more extra base power. He always honed his defensive game. Can Luis Arraez do the same thing? I don't necessarily envision Luis Arraez as a long-term Padre. I mean, I know he's under contract through next season. Is he someone you want to sign to a long-term contract extension? I'm not sure yet, but generally, what I've read is that he has value for certain teams. And one of the teams that a lot of people think he should have value for is the San Diego Padres.
Sure.
With a bunch of sluggers already there, with a ballpark like Petco Park, with, you know, a lot of outfield space, just like in Miami. It should be a good spot for him. A team that saw a value in Luis Arraez, attacked and went after it, and added it early in the season here.
How about Toddy? 1. Arraez? 2. Manny? 3. Crony? 4. Profar? 5. Would be pretty dirty. I'd like to mix it up a little bit just because that's what it's fun to talk about. But, you know, in Fernando Tatis Jr., going to get some better pitches to hit, in my opinion, in the leadoff spot. And then, you know, he hits a double. Arraez definitely moving him over. You know, he's definitely moving him over. More opportunities for Manny. You want Manny Machado. It's tough for me sometimes.
He saw a hit and run yesterday. You feel like Arraez would be as good as anybody 100%. In finding a hole that's been cleared out if you get a runner moving in front of him.
He's really an ideal fit for this team. Ideal. He's an ideal fit for this team. He can hit the most elite pitching from either side. And what he does for this lineup lengthens it entirely. So I love the move. I have, again, A+. And so far, I think in his career in San Diego, I think he's batting .333. Got off to the hot start. That certainly helps. But expect him in the lineup today. Expect him to get some knocks.
Nothing really changed between the first game and the next two when he only got one hit.
Right.
He hits the ball,
yeah.
Puts it in the air, puts it in the outfield, puts it on line drives. He is ultimately going to be subject to the whims of BABIP. The ball's in play because he doesn't hit home runs. He doesn't strike out. So when the ball goes to where they ain't, he's going to have 3 and 4 hit games. When it goes kind of at people, then he's going to make some outs. But that is always going to be the game of Luis Arias. And, you know, that to some people is a negative, and to some people it's a positive. And he's really one of the more polarizing players in baseball.
For me, I like a guy at the top of the order. No matter where he hits the top of the order, he can get knocks. And that guy gets knocks at a pretty prolific rate. So knocks are very important. It's how you score runs. I'm down to leave him in the leadoff. Just messing around, having fun. Tough to be an RBI guy when you're not really in a lot of RBI positions. So,
busy second half of the show coming up, including Jesse Agler and the Incorporator. Keep sending us some words. I saw a few in the chat, but there's still about 30-plus minutes to go to get a word in for Jesse for today's Incorporator. Rhino Report, and I mentioned A.J. Preller at 9:30, right?
Yeah.
9:30 coming up. Second half of Ben Woods next on 97.3 The Fan. Dylan Cease will get the series finale tomorrow. Cross your fingers. Hopefully the Padres going for a sweep.
Yep.
Today will be the challenge with Randy Vasquez getting the spot start against Shota Imanaga. But Cease was the center of attention yesterday in the dugout there at Wrigley Field when he met with the Chicago media for the first time since leaving the White Sox in the trade right before the start of the season. We'll hear a little bit of what Dylan Cease had to say coming up after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. Yeah, so this is a bit of a courtesy for the Chicago media, just a convenience of making Dylan Cease available. It's like if the Royals come to town, they make Seth Lugo available to San Diego media to chat with him, just to catch up.
Do they do
all
that
at once? They sometimes do. Other teams will do that when they visit San Diego if you've got a former player that's going to be of some interest. And it saves Dylan Cease some effort as well. Instead of having like 6 different reporters, and they've got a bunch of, obviously Chicago's a big city, so there's a bunch of different outlets. And instead of having them all come by like 6 different times during the road trip to say, hey, Dylan, can I get a few minutes? Just want to talk to you about leaving, the White Sox and the end of your tenure there. They do it in press conference format where they all just get around and ask questions at once, and Dylan Cease can just get it over with. So he met with the Chicago media yesterday, had some interesting comments about his departure from the White Sox. We got that audio, Paulie. Here's Dylan Cease yesterday before the game at Wrigley Field.
What's it mean to come back to Chicago? You're at Wrigley Field, your first team.
Yeah, it's always good to come back. Obviously I don't have quite as much history with the Cubs, but I enjoy Wrigley, I enjoy Chicago. It's going to be fun.
What went through your mind when you were traded? Everyone knew it was going to happen, but how it happened and when it happened?
Honestly, mostly initially it was just figuring out the logistics of everything. I find myself sometimes when I'm falling asleep or whatever, kind of just thinking of some memories I had here. But for the most part, it's just been just logistics and, figuring things out, getting things done.
What you're doing right now, after what happened last year, feel like you're in a good spot?
Yeah, we're a very competitive team right now. I'm happy with how I've been throwing it. And it's great to be here.
What's been the biggest key to the start you're on with your new team so far?
I think it's just a continuation of really a process. I started last year. It just took me a full year to kind of figure out what works for me. I think that's just baseball sometimes. It's we're not robots out there, so sometimes mechanical cues and feels and different things can take some time. But, last year wasn't enjoyable in really any way, but I can sit here now and say I got a lot out of it. I learned kind of what doesn't work, and I got back to, hopefully now what is working.
What's your mentality in the midst of rotation when someone like Musgrove goes out, even if it's hopefully just a kind of minimal stint?
I think it's, I always kind of just bring the same focus to the field every day. I think we're all just focusing on what we need to work on and what we need to practice to prepare to compete. And throughout the course of any season, usually teams' depths are going to be tested, especially in the pitching. In pitching, it's obviously a fairly injury-prone position. So I don't think Joe has anything major. I don't think he does either. So now it's time for someone else to step up, and they get a great opportunity to get experience and prove that they can compete at the level, and hopefully whoever steps up does, and then they're that much more prepared and that much better. Then Joe comes back and he's feeling good, and then now it's two pluses.
You guys wake me up when that's over, for the love of God.
It's over.
You did notice the headline stating comment when he said, last year wasn't enjoyable in really any way.
Any way, shape,
or
form.
For Dylan Cease with the Chicago White Sox.
Didn't have a good year personally. Team didn't.
Yeah, and the reason he said, it's definitely, again, with the Sox, though, I mean, I felt like we really had the talent. We just didn't put it together. It's interesting because there are a lot of parallels between the White Sox and certainly last year's San Diego Padres. Expectations high, you know, seemingly a great, you know, nucleus of talent put together that simply couldn't put it together and get it done. And obviously they've gone even worse. They've gone the wrong direction. They're now one of the worst teams in baseball. And I don't blame Dylan Cease for being extremely happy that he got out of there when he did. Because that is a bad situation. And when you're in the middle of a bad situation, as much as you want to say, hey, they're a professional, they're getting paid for their job, how can you possibly be at your best when you're surrounded by so much, bleh, you know, so much misery, so much that is going wrong? Of course he had a not great season last year. And of course he's pitching better this year for a team that has got some at least life to it and some hope that, you know, there could be a postseason run at some point. There's no hope in Chicago right now on the South Side. And he's very glad to be out of there.
I'm just thinking about that female reporter and how she sounds like every woman I ever dated in the city of Chicago.
All I could think of was Spot. The movie The Fugitive.
Yeah.
You have a one-armed man in custody. I can't do a Chicago. But.
Spot. Hey, are you in a good spot right now? Excuse me? Yeah, I got to go to class. All right. See you later. It's... Excuse me, the Willie.
Sears Tower?
Yeah, the Sears Tower. Oh, hey, how are you?
But, you know, Dylan Cease was probably the most important acquisition. More important than Luis Arraez for the San Diego Padres.
I shudder to think.
Where would
I
they
said,
be right now?
Where would they be? Honestly, who is stepping up and filling that role?
I mean, Waldron's your number four without Cease. And then Brito Vasquez. As your number five, with even less depth than you already have. I don't think we realized it necessarily at the time, how desperate the Padres were for pitching, and probably still are to some extent. But without Dylan Cease, this season, the start of this season, could look quite different than it does.
Well, and factor in, too, you have two of your top starters. One has already been on the IL, and one just went on the IL as well. So, yeah, man, Dylan Cease is a really, really important part of this team. And, you know, tomorrow's going to be a big start for him. Need him to come through. And he was talking about that, too. And guys got to step up right now. I'd love to see Randy Vasquez step up today and just get some outs. You know, get some outs, do your job. And see what you can put together offensively against Shoto Imanaga, which so far this season hasn't been very much. And he looked filthy in spring training. He looks filthy now. What a story he has been. And is your kind of clear rookie of the year right now in the NL.
I'm looking at Cease's numbers. And obviously the loss to the Phillies when he gave up the five runs and the six hits is still kind of fresh in our minds. He had a good start his last time out against the Diamondbacks. But in six of his seven starts, other than that one, you know, kind of bad outing against the Phillies, every single time he's given up, here's the hits. 4-2-2-1-3. The runs, 2-2-0-1-1-1.
It's fantastic. I
mean, that's six out of seven starts doing pretty much everything you can. With a little offensive support, he could easily be 6-1 right now. Now, he's only 4-2 because he hasn't gotten the support in all of those games, but he could be sitting at 6-1 and being discussed among the Cy Young candidates in the National League right now, with a 2.55 ERA, very solid acquisition at a timely moment for AJ Preller.
Yeah. And again, using some of those pieces that you got back for Juan Soto to flip for Dylan Cease was really, really a brilliant move by AJ Preller. And he's been, you know, so far this year, and we'll talk to him again at 9:30 this morning. AJ Preller will join us. Those have been some really, really important moves.
You know, speaking of the moves, and we'll have AJ on at 9:30, a lot of analysis still going on about the Luis Arraez trade.
We'll ask AJ about it when he joins the show at 9:30.
Yeah. What time is AJ joining us?
9:30.
In case you missed it.
I, for the most part, I was reading Ken Rosenthal's piece yesterday about the trade, and he makes the point that Luis Arraez is viewed very differently by many people around.
Absolutely.
Some people don't think he's valuable at all.
Right.
Which is strange, but they look at him and go, guy doesn't hit for power, doesn't walk that much.
He's not fast.
He's not a good defensive player. Yeah. They consider him kind of a net negative And then there's other people who think he has a tremendous amount of value. One of the very few guys who doesn't strike out, has great bat control, puts the ball in play, hits line drives, and, you know, hits for a high batting average. And there is a very, very diverse set of opinions about Luis Arraez in Major League Baseball.
It is interesting to me, and I was thinking about it yesterday. I saw a couple people tweeting about it, and the lineup construction for me sometimes falls in the category of bullpen management, you know, where it's like, all right, this is kind of a necessary evil of the job of sports talk radio. Do you wonder if he would be better served hitting lower in the order than you know, you want a leadoff hitter that is on base, has a high on base percentage. But when in Luis's case, he doesn't walk a ton. His batting average is His batting average is usually around his OBP.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't get a hit, he's not getting on. But he gets a lot of hits, right? And he puts the ball in play. Why wouldn't you hit him second or third? You know what I'm saying? Like in certain instances, and I haven't gone back and looked to see where he's hit traditionally in his career.
Mostly leadoff.
Yeah. It does feel like that's going to be the spot for him here. Even against last night, a really tough lefty. And hey, you saw what he's capable of doing. I mean, the ball he hit in the first inning, he pounded that ball down third baseline, made a nice play on it. And, you know, listen, you take the good with the bad. You keep hitting barrels, good things are going to happen. But I was wondering, like, would he be better served? Would he like the ability to drive in more runs? That expands his game a little bit. You can't, harder to drive in runs from the leadoff spot, obviously. But if you move him down to two or three, is that something you would consider if you were the skipper?
Yeah, you know, I worry about the amount that he puts the ball into play. If he's batting two and you get the leadoff hitter on, he doesn't have a ton of speed. So he does ground out a bunch.
Yeah.
You know, when his hard hit balls go right at someone and he's always going to make contact, you may have a number of double plays and you'll stay out of at least one of those by putting him in the leadoff spot.
Yeah,
because
for sure.
you can't hand into a double play when you lead off in the first inning. I think you make a good point, though. He's still just 27 years old.
Yeah, man.
Not super young, but still on the level where his game isn't necessarily everything it's going to be. And the comp that you hear a ton is Tony Gwynn. And Tony Gwynn wasn't exactly who he finished at when he was 27 either. He developed more offensive skill, more defensive skill as he went on. And I wonder what kind of player Luis Arraez is going to be in 4 or 5 years. Can he keep it up the way Tony Gwynn did, deep into his 30s, and remain the hitter that he is today? Because the longevity is such an important part of it as well. But Tony added more extra base power. He always honed his defensive game. Can Luis Arraez do the same thing? I don't necessarily envision Luis Arraez as a long-term Padre. I mean, I know he's under contract through next season. Is he someone you want to sign to a long-term contract extension? I'm not sure yet, but generally, what I've read is that he has value for certain teams. And one of the teams that a lot of people think he should have value for is the San Diego Padres.
Sure.
With a bunch of sluggers already there, with a ballpark like Petco Park, with, you know, a lot of outfield space, just like in Miami, it should be a good spot for him. A team that saw a value in Luis Arraez, attacked and went after it, and added it early in the season here.
How about Toddy 1, Arraez 2. Manny 3, Crony 4, Profar 5. It would be pretty dirty. I'd like to mix it up a little bit just because I, you know, that's what it's fun to talk about. But, you know, in Fernando Tatis Jr., going to get some better pitches to hit, in my opinion, in the leadoff spot. And then, you know, he hits a double. Arraez definitely moving him over. You know, he's definitely moving him over. More opportunities for Manny. You want Manny Machado. It's tough for me sometimes.
He saw a hit and run yesterday. You feel like Arraez would be as good as anybody 100%. In finding a hole that's been cleared out if you, you know, you get a runner moving in front of him.
He's really an ideal fit for this team. Ideal. He's an ideal fit for this team. He can hit the most elite pitching from either side, and what he does for this lineup lengthens it entirely. So I love the move. Again, A+. And so far, I think in his career in San Diego, I think he's batting .333. Got off to the hot start. That certainly helps. But expect him in the lineup today. Expect him to get some knocks.
Nothing really changed between the first game and the next two when he only got one hit.
Right.
He hits the ball,
yeah.
Puts it in the air, puts it in the outfield, puts it on line drives. He is ultimately going to be subject to the whims of BABIP. The ball's in play because he doesn't hit home runs. He doesn't strike out. So when the ball goes to where they ain't, he's going to have 3 and 4 hit games. When it goes kind of at people, then he's going to make some outs. But that is always going to be the game of Luis Arias. And, you know, that to some people is a negative, and to some people it's a positive. And he's really one of the more polarizing players in baseball.
For me, I like a guy at the top of the order, no matter where he hits the top of the order, he can get knocks. And that guy gets knocks at a pretty prolific rate. So knocks are very important. It's how you score runs. I'm down to leave him in the leadoff. Just messing around, having fun. Tough to be an RBI guy when you're not really in a lot of RBI positions. So,
busy second half of the show coming up, including Jesse Agler and the Incorporator. Keep sending us some words. I saw a few in the chat, but there's still about 30-plus minutes to go to get a word in for Jesse for today's Incorporator. Rindle Report, and I mentioned A.J. Preller at 9:30, right?
Yeah,
A.J. 9:30 coming up. Second half of Ben Woods next on 97.3 The Fan.